Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on, what is the date? The 15th of November?
The 15th. It's the day before my wife's birthday.
Oh, how don't nice. Hey, yeah. Wait a minute. We missed last week.
We did? I was here. I was here. Who did I talk to?
I don't know. It wasn't me.
I couldn't be here. Tuesday was one of those wild days where I just had it last week.
I had it.
I couldn't do it. I've never missed a podcast. Have I ever?
No, and unless you were like in Cuba.
Right. And even then I say, I'm going to bring my microphone with me, right? And you say, don't. And then last week, I had a really rough few days. Just, a lot of work, a lot of things happening. And then Wednesday, we tried to get together and you couldn't. And then so we said, we'll have to just wait a week.
It just makes it more interesting.
Oh,
you get
a
longer-term perspective on the craziness.
Right. So, it compounds.
So the latest, of course, is, I guess, Europe was fixed,
yeah.
Or maybe not. Or no. Yes. No.
They were.
It was. No. They were.
As a matter of fact,
it's
that
okay.
is happening.
It's okay.
happening in real time.
Things
that's
are
real
fine.
Time.
Things are fine. No, they're not.
And that's how the day progresses every single day.
It's hilarious.
It's unreal. It's you gotta just say, why can't they just save the information till they make up their minds?
So how does this affect your day-to-day work?
Well, it doesn't. There's interesting things that happen, so that's kind of fun, where one leader is going to be thrown out and another one in, and the gyrations of what goes on and the headlines that are false. It's kind of a fun game to just watch every once in a while. It's getting a little old. You want to return to at least some normality of things that kind of make sense, because you could have, like today, a retail sales number in the U.S. that came out that was better than expected, and some decent earnings.
Which surprises me, by the way.
Yeah. Well, it surprised a lot of people. Remember something. It's against estimates. So where you have China in the 12, 13, 14, 15% year-over-year retail sales, and you have us here at 0.3, and we're excited about the 0.3.
Ooh.
You follow what I'm saying? So it's all conditioning. It's all expectations versus reality. It's all not raw numbers, right? It's just it's what was expected. And then the day progresses. Markets are flat. Things are okay. Things are doing its thing. Oil is just going up to the sky again.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you turn your head around. You make a couple phone calls. You do your thing. You're doing some research. 10 minutes later, you're looking like, what happened? If you weren't paying attention, like what just happened in that 10-minute span that all of a sudden the markets got goosed? Went straight up 0.75% in 10 minutes. And the answer is, who knows? Really, it could have been that in Italy they said they're going to probably have a government tomorrow. It could have been that people were excited about the fact that, there was a drop in the bond rates. It could have been just somebody stepping on the wrong button. Who knows? But all of a sudden, the markets popped up and started ramping up through the afternoon, which means then short covering happens and everybody jumps on board, which creates more of the same. And then all of a sudden it faded at the end. But it was a pretty good day. We had green lit up all over the place today. It was pretty interesting.
Huh.
Considering. Tomorrow should be a different day, though.
Already yeah, well, every day seems to be like an adventure.
Yeah. And through the nighttime, you usually see a big fade. Asian markets seem to have a lot more sense of reality. And they seem to be much more sensible about what goes on versus Europe and the U.S.
Yeah, that's typical at a top.
It could be.
At least
could be. You never know. I mean, the thing is this, that futures are already fading. The euro is dropping over again. It's under 135. It's about 134.4.
No big deal.
Dropped down like crazy. It'll pop up tomorrow.
Until it gets back to $1.25 and then starts fading down to where it belongs, which is a buck or 90 cents, to be honest about it. I'm not impressed. I mean, I'm impressed that they can manage this, but I'm not impressed with the number.
The price. Let's talk about the U.S. Postal Service for a second, shall we?
Yeah.
It seems that they're going to run out of money.
It's bull crap,
Well,
again,
of course, because they're giving it to the government just so they need a scapegoat to make it look bad.
Yeah. No, the post office is doing fine, and there's all kinds of documentation that their business is better than ever, but they're trying to screw the post office. I don't know who – Lieberman's one of the guys behind this, and I don't know what's going on, but I think it's a catastrophe. Maybe they're just trying to kill the union there. I'm not sure. It's possible.
I don't know where the benefit of that is. Is it just because for all these years the post office has taken the crap, so therefore they're immune to any problems and it doesn't cause any problems because everybody knows, at least from the rhetoric and from the propaganda, that the post office is a bad and a money losing operation. So just keep on pinning money against them.
The propaganda could be is very negative, although if you really put a letter in the mail. It's amazing how well it gets to the other side within right. a day or two easily with no problem. It's – I don't know what – you know. And, then, of course, they have all these value-added services now because they've actually exploited the negative image by putting – you know, you can buy these little extra certificates you can put on there. And then you can track it online and make sure that it arrived when it's supposed to arrive and all that sort of thing. But that's bogus. But it's, you know, a moneymaker. Instead of paying 44 cents for – you have to pay 44 cents plus 75 cents for this extra service. So, I mean, they're just making money hand over fist, it seems to me. You go to the post office, it's pretty crowded.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, they said there's a $5.1 billion deficit, I guess, and faces default this week as their financial woes mount. So we'll see what happens. They're running out of money and we'll see what happens there, and I assume there'll be a last minute save, right? Isn't that probably what's going to happen with this?
Yeah, there'll be some agreement or something crazy. Yeah, obviously. Hello.
Right. That's right. you know, just to talk about some of the earnings and things that have been going on and what's happening in the markets. A lot of people are scratching their head and saying, you know, a lot of people have asked me, like, you know, why was the market up today, or why was the market down today? And let me just tell you what's going on. Recently, I think this is really important for everybody listening to understand some of the dynamics of end of year positioning in these markets. So right now, it seems like what's happening, if you haven't noticed, that every time there's a bit of a dip, well, 0.5%, 1%, 1.5%, 2% on the markets, it seems to be a buyer that steps in. Now, who's this mysterious buyer? You know, is it what is it all about? Well, one of the big things is that a lot of mutual funds and hedge funds have been trailing their applicable benchmarks this year. Because of the way the year shook out with all the ups and downs and the crazy quick run-up and caught people off guard. So you have this rotation going on. If you look at the stock sectors that are actually performing right now, they have quickly shifted over the last 6 weeks from the utility staples and telecommunications, which are usually the more defensive plays, to the materials, into the services, into the consumer discretionary, if you will. So the sector rotation, you know.
Right. So in other words, what happens at this time of year, you can't really trust, you know, unless you're in the full-fledged meltdown, it's pretty much people just swapping out of one idea. And, well, you know, I think this next year it's going to be this, and they start buying and selling. So people are just swapping around.
Well, they're also buying the stuff that has not performed and selling the stuff that has performed. So in other words, selling their winners, taking their profits, and buying the things that have been really trashed.
Right.
And this way they think there's going to be what's called a reversion to the mean, which is that everything comes back to normal eventually, whatever that means. And they do that. The second thing is there's an end-of-year performance chase, which is clearly happening. That's why you buy in the dips and try to grab a little bit here and there. There's a big fear of missing the next rally because the rallies don't make a lot of sense. The drops don't make a lot of sense on the quickness of them. So there's this fear of missing the rally. So not a lot of selling going on, people buying the dips. And then finally, you know, this concept of if it drops, it's going to come back one day. You got the Fed behind it. You got, decent earnings and all the things that are going on around the world. So why not buy? Worst can happen, you lose some money, but it's better than not making money. Crazy.
Yeah, that is kind of nuts. In fact, that is the rationale is that, you know, you don't want to lose not making money.
Right. It's the fear of not making money. And then you see short covering going on.
By the way, that's an interesting psychology.
Oh, it's big. You have that especially when it comes – think about this. You have that when it comes to people in the business that are benchmarking their performance against, let's say, the S&P 500. So the S&P 500 does 5% for the year. If they make 3 or 2 or 1, they get chastised. On the other hand, If the S&P goes down 5%, then they're only down 1%. They're still down. Everybody's pissed off. You know, it's like a no-win. So they have to at least be at the S&P.
Hmm.
And you can't miss anything for that. So you got to march right on. The other thing is short covering going on. You see, like, Green Mountain Coffee Roasters. Have you seen them lately? What happened?
Your favorite. Green Mountain Coffee Roasters.
Oh, they got smoked.
They came out with earnings. I missed that.
40%.
Wow.
Yeah. One day, overnight. They came out with earnings, and it wasn't exactly what everybody had anticipated. And the guidance wasn't great. There was some margin compression. And they dropped about 40%. They were down about 25% overnight. Then the next day, they just kept them getting just smoked. So, and this is after also, there was a couple of guys out there saying how there's a real problem with the company, et cetera. But that was up 12% today. Small caps were up. The highly shorted stocks were up dramatically today. So you got this short covering going on because, again, people are looking to take their profits at this point and not get screwed on the chance that there's going to be a big rally.
Yeah. So. Well, also there's a few other, Dell.
Well, yeah. Dell comes out with earnings tonight, and they guided down for their revenue into fiscal 12. Margin compression again. Looking at the big problem was that they did not meet their targets because of shifting their business focus onto a different, you know, from more of consumer to more business. They made their.
Which they've been doing for a long time.
Yeah.
Seems like forever. In fact, I had a conversation with Michael Dell, mm-hmm. and. Nothing quotable, but it was apparent that he was annoyed by the fact that nobody had noticed this. The fact that the company has long since, they sell consumer products, but they're big into, you know, essentially competing head-to-head on enterprise with HP.
Right. And obviously HP and maybe even IBM on the service side is doing a little bit better, or there's just not enough business to go around. So there was a beat on EPS. There was a little bit of a miss, I believe, on revenue, but again, guiding down a little bit. So the stock sold off 2% or so after hours. Not a big deal. We'll see how that plays out. But, you know, some of the technology has done very well. I mean, IBM came up the other day. They had, I think, an all-time high. And
yeah, right, and then when Buffett buys in. Yeah. What's that all about?
Well, he bought in the last quarter, which probably helped to get to an all-time high. He bought 5% of the company. And I think over the last year or so, IBM's bought back in share repurchases, 5% of the company. If you think about that,
that makes your numbers look great. And this, of course, is your pet peeve. You have two pet peeves. People who have not listened to the show should know what they are. One is these buyback things, which screw up the numbers. It's a scam, the way you see it. And the other thing is people who are in airports and they take their shoes off and they have bare feet and they're stomping all around and you're afraid that you're going to get athlete's foot.
Yeah, the worst is the barefoot buybacks. That's the worst. But, you know, really, seriously, it's, you know, the problem is that with IBM, they're a great company. They have great revenue stream. Everything is wonderful. The thing that is a little troubling is that over the last number of years, they have bought back an enormous amount of their shares. Enormous. Almost to a point that it seems like they're going private. And what happens is when they buy back shares is that the earnings are calculated on a per share basis. So now you have X earnings divided by X shares. Well, now you have less shares. So now all of a sudden your earnings look better. So that's how you keep on growing your earnings over time, is simply buying back your shares. Now, who cares if IBM does that if their stock keeps going up? That's fine. They keep a floor on it and it moves up and it's great. The problem is that what happens when a company does it for a short time, just for a quick fix on EPS, or if it's really a very much of a window dressing situation, and there's, you know, bad things to happen, then the company owns the stock and it drops. That becomes really double ugly.
That's bad. But apparently bad. Buffett looked at the numbers and said, hey, I think I like what I'm looking at here. I think they're buying back their stock. I might as well buy some of it too. I'll get in on this action.
I think it's interesting how Buffett talks about owning companies. I mean, not stocks, but companies.
Yeah, he likes the idea of owning companies. But if you really look at what he does, he owns a lot of stock.
He owns a lot of stock. He didn't even talk to management about this at all. He said that he got all the information from reading the annual reports and probably dissecting the various statements. But I thought it was really fascinating how he talked about how he read the annual reports all these years. I'm thinking, if I'm a good PR firm, advertising agency / writer, we could write a really good piece here in the annual report to entice investors. If they're using this as a research piece, you know, is that something that's going to be, you know, how we can craft it properly? Now, the balance sheet and the cash flow statements and all those things obviously are just statements. But I thought it was kind of interesting when he said he didn't talk to management at all. They didn't know about his buy. And I thought if he's buying a company, isn't one of the things you want to do is talk to management?
You would think you'd have a lunch at least.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But they found out about it when he exposed this on CNBC. And I thought it was kind of ironic that it ran the stock up like, I don't know, 1 or 2%, and then by the end of the day, it was down. That day. But IBM is a great company. Cisco is really also another big boy who is really kicking into gear after they shed about $1 billion of expenses because of just lackluster government sales, which is a very big part of their business. Stock is up about, I think, 9% since their earnings about, I guess it was a week and a half ago or so.
I'm not a big fan of Cisco.
I know. They have a lot of competition.
Huawei out of China is one of them. Yeah. And I don't see, unless they do a deal where they're doing a joint venture with these other guys, I'm not seeing this as a good opportunity for anybody. My wife likes it.
Why?
I don't know. She just likes the name.
Cisco. Is it this one or the food company?
No, this one.
This one. She likes the name Cisco.
Hates the food company.
Likes the name Cisco.
Well, you know, I mean, she likes, well, Cisco, you know, it's a routers and all these internet things could be important. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, speaking of liking things, we have a new symbol, I think. There's going to be a symbol name, a symbol change for Groupon. Groupon came out last week at 20 and immediately went to about 34, 35. There's a chart there I put with it. Hmm. And then since it slipped, I think, every single day. And we tried to get short shares on that as soon as it came out, but it was very expensive and very, very difficult to borrow.
It would be good for our fake buying and selling thing.
That would have been, I think, a 30% gain already from the top to where it is now.
Did either one of us do that? No.
Well, we had it on there, but we didn't get together last week, which we were going to do.
Oh, you missed. Well, there's plenty of these coming along.
Plenty. But I think there's going to be a symbol change to POS.
What was it before?
GRPN.
GRPN.
But it's going to be the acronym POS.
Point of sale?
Piece of shoot.
That's a good one. Piece of shit, yeah. That's funny. I guess that's why that's why the thing was available. I didn't think about it, but that is a obvious thing.
I'm only kidding. They're really not changing their name, but yes, that would be
cool. Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah. I'm just pulling your leg.
Oh. Yeah. So, is POS, actually, let's see who has that. Somebody must.
Somebody's got it. Let's see.
Let's look it up.
Yeah. Plexus Holdings. On the London Exchange.
Well, I wouldn't buy into that company.
Speaking of the same genre, LinkedIn is past its – or getting towards its lockup period where you could start selling shares if you're an insider. And I think that there's going to be about 6.5 million shares sold to the open market, secondary.
Why didn't people buy callers? I mean, I do not understand this lockup thing when there are ways to get around it.
Well, wait a minute. The principals? Who are you talking about? Who can get around it? Maybe they did.
Well, yeah, I guess they could have.
Yeah,
and then my God, you know, all this. Well, I guess then thing could hit the market and everything can collapse.
Well, it has already. I mean, Bain Capital is selling all their shares. And so now you have a stock that was down, you know, last few days significantly. I think didn't it get to like 120 or something? Didn't it get pretty high there, right? It's like 75 now. I think it got to about 120. And so now this is kind of going to be this cloud. First of all, you have two things. The first thing you have is that there's more shares outstanding. And the second thing that you have now is that the question of how much more is going to be offered.
It went to 110.
Yeah, I have right.
Didn't
here,
we short it at early on? And then it went back up to 110 after we got bounced out. And now it's like dribbling all over the place. It looks terrible.
Yeah.
77. So this would be another one to put back on the list.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's a good opportunity in this, but I think that the shares that are coming up, that come back to the market and the amount and the there's another lockup period that's going to be ending soon, and that's what everybody's spooked about.
Hmm. Yeah, they should be.
Yep.
So what did that stock come out at?
I think it was. It's probably in the beginning here. Let's see if you. I don't think it shows this because it only shows the public amount where it came out. I think it was 50 or 60, something like that, when it came out originally. All right, so moving along. Lots of going on here. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. Fannie Mae is requesting another $7 billion.
Yeah, they need the money.
They got to pay off their managers, right?
Well, the bonus time is it's Christmas. There's got to be some money. There's got to be a party.
You think? Oh, it's going to be one of those
The Christmas party.
Oh, I see. Yeah, $7 billion. Yeah, even just slice off a few hundred billion for that. But this is an ongoing situation. The last time I think it was a few months ago. Another $5 billion. I mean, this starts to add up. A couple billion here and there starts to add up a bit, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm guessing.
Yeah. So, this is kind of in the background that this is going on. This is obviously due to mortgage foreclosures, defaults, the inability to keep up with payments by people. Also, the fact that there is a lower interest rate. They may have to refinance a lower rate than they expected. There's a lot of little things going on that's happening here. Plus, who knows what kind of issues are being picked up by anybody if there's anything out there that they could issue in terms of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So there's kind of like a lot of things going against them right now. And that's right smack in the middle of the heart of the problem, of the housing market. And they're now also going to be requiring, I believe, a higher requirement for mortgage refinancing.
Oh, well, so since they're not doing any of it now.
Right.
They talk a big game. You might as well just change the numbers and just make yourself look good. It doesn't make any difference.
Right, and especially if they're going to do some kind of a mortgage bill where they're going to do the government's going to put in some beneficial way for individuals to refinance without any kind of income requirement, whatever. They're going to have to make up for that on the other side by increasing their lending requirements.
It's not going to happen.
No.
No, money's locked up. I don't blame the bankers for this. The way the situation is, there's no evidence that the value of houses and the market value of houses is going to not drop more. Right. So why would you want to give people money?
Yeah. Listen, it's like this. If you're an individual out there or a banker or another country and you come to me and I'm Italy and I say to you, hey, here's the deal. We don't exactly have a government in place right now, and our debt to GDP is in the upper 120s, and we're questioning our debt deficit ability to pay things and taxes and all that. Plus, we're probably going to get a downgrade and all that. How many bonds do you want to buy?
Yeah,
you're gonna be like, huh?
What?
Yeah. So that's probably.
I think I'm gonna go buy Peruvian bonds.
Exactly. So. That's what's happening. Not only that, the banks within the region, because now they're double exposed to the regional sovereign debt plus the debt of the region, which is a slowing region. GDP came out in the Eurozone today at about 0.2, which was where it was expected. But that's pretty terrible, especially that things are going backwards quickly. And they're going to enter a recession probably next quarter or the quarter after. Mm-hmm. So the banks, which are also having a big problem, as a matter of fact, I put a chart attached to this. This is something that spooked me today, because there's something called it's a euro USD 3-month basis swap. Basically, what we're saying is that the availability of lending money and how much risk is involved in the we'll call it the differential between the euro and the dollar, like where overnight lending would go with banks and overseas lending and swap arrangements. When it got to 100, that was a big alert. Or negative 100, really. It was 1%, negative 100 basis points. Big, big, big concern. Because at that point now, all of a sudden, liquidity's drying up. People aren't lending. You're almost playing a VIG to offset your risk.
So what am I looking at with this chart? What does this even mean? I don't know. I have no idea.
Basically, what it is a it is the it's like the VIG. It's the cost differential to borrow in euros from dollars when you have to do cross currency trading for whatever reason. And what's happening is that when liquidity dries up, when people aren't lending, when there's a lot of concern overseas about putting money into different asset class or different currencies, so from U.S. dollar to euros, because you don't know where the euro is going day to day, right? And theoretically, if it goes down significantly, you could be caught on the wrong side of a trade very quickly.
Right.
That was supposed to be a very quick overnight or three-day trade or something like that to carry it. So it's not really as much – it is for investors, but it's really more for the system – and how the system reacts to some of this. And when it got to 100 or negative 100, where the VIG got to be a 1% really, the what that meant was that a lot of liquidity is being drained, a lot of fear is being put into the market. At 150, negative 150 is the same level as the Lehman bankruptcy time. Okay? And there's been other crises that have been at the 100 mark or so. Well, today we went to a negative 119. Now, this is after supposedly we have a new government coming into Italy. We have supposedly yesterday a relief on the Italian bonds rising above 7%. Greece is supposedly calmed down, at least in the background. But now French, their bonds hit a high, and now Spain is being hit. Now, you know my discussion about France. France, if that goes down, the whole thing is done.
Right. Alone. Your thesis is the right, and that's what nobody wants to talk about. France.
Yeah, and that's a big problem because they are widening. Their rate is widening dramatically. Now there was a Spanish bond auction today, I believe a Spanish bond auction, and not all the bonds were taken. They did not sell out of their bonds. That was a problem. In other words, the demand wasn't there. And there's going to be, a French and I think Italian tomorrow, which could be kind of loopy. And the problem is that the less people take, the more the interest rate goes up because it's not in demand, right? Supply demand.
Right. So, the price
goes up and they have to pay even more on the deal.
Yeah.
And it spreads it. And I don't know who wants to be buying bonds at this point, right? And ECB isn't buying bonds. They've kind of been putting that aside. They're trying to see how the market takes it. So this is what's happening right now, and it's causing a lot of angst and agita with regard to the lending and with the euro, and rightfully so, by the way. So the reason why if you remember my repatriation theme of why was the euro going up when it didn't seem logical?
This is your theory.
Yeah.
Which I buy into, by the way, because it's the only explanation I've ever heard that makes some sense, which is they want to repatriate the euro so they can buy their way out of or to kind of liquidate their assets.
Right. And so that was going on again.
Yeah,
and,
liquidate with a value.
Right. And that's been mistakenly taken as a thumbs up to trade risk assets because that's what's been the play. But in fact, what it is a if it is a repatriation, it's simply a acknowledgement that they have real problems there and it's being misread by the markets.
Yeah, I would say it's being misread in a big way if your theory is right, big time.
We'll see soon enough because this can't go on much longer. You cannot have Italian bonds over 7%.
No.
That they get 7%. You can't see French bonds spreading like this. You can't.
No.
It can't go on.
No. I think it's gone on too long personally because I'm kind of a bear at the moment anyway. But it seems to me as though the more they put this off with their bull crap, the worse it's going to be.
Right. Right now, it used to be for a while there that putting it off and moving it forward, if you will, in time or move it back in time was okay because it was kind of, letting things cool out. And now it's to a point that, the pot is boiling over and either take the top off or it's going to blow off. So that's kind of what's going on now. And this is the highest we've seen this.
Minus 119?
Yep. Since the Lehman.
Well, this chart will be on the.
Yeah, we'll put it on there.
Okay. DHUnplugged.com.
And actually, if you go a little further,
it's called the Euro USD 3M basis swap chart.
Hey, I have a weird question. Do you see that YouTube video on the bottom of that email I sent you?
No, I did not.
It's on mine. I didn't put it there.
What? Let me look.
I did not put that video there.
Hold on.
Oh, I don't know if you're looking through Gmail. I'm looking through Gmail. There's a video on the bottom. Are they advertising or sending videos through or something?
Excuse me. No, there's nothing like, there's no video
anywhere. I have a video of mine. It says videos from this email. I mean, I don't know if they're, like, it's an advertisement
or
something.
You're the one that sent the email.
I know. I didn't send a video.
I don't have a video.
I should watch that later to see what's going on with that. That's
weird. Probably something, hey, you know. Or,
yeah, but I don't want any videos in my email.
I wouldn't think. Well, it didn't come to me.
Yeah, good. Okay. I have a correction, misstatement, a need to tell everybody that Pringles is not going away. I got it wrong.
This is a mea culpa.
This is bad. This takes us way back now. All of my.
So you went on and on. I think for about a half an hour, to be honest about it.
It could have been longer. It could
about
have been four or five
Pringles
shows.
Pringles
hours.
Thing where you didn't know what Pringles were. And then you went on about how they, you know, who needs them, and you. Then that was, I forgot how it ended.
If my recollection was, you had all the knowledge about Pringles.
I've actually bought a can or two of Pringles in my day, and I think they're amusing. It's an amusing product.
Well,
it's potato chips
being,
in a can. I mean, who comes up with these
sold.
Ideas?
They're being sold. They're being carved out and being sold. So they're not going away. So anybody that went out and may have bought cans to protect their interests because of that last podcast.
I bought 30 cans of Pringles, you know.
Anyway, so the other things that are going on, there's some very interesting things in the municipal market. Alabama, Jefferson County filed for bankruptcy.
Ah, it's about time.
The third largest bankruptcy. Third largest bankruptcy. Let's see. I guess it's the largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history. Yep. Edging out the 94 Orange County.
Well, there's only been one between now and 94. It sounds like everything's fine.
Yeah, so far so good. Keep spending. Keep spending. And I want to ask you something. What's wrong with politics these days? Has it gotten worse, or is it just every time I think it gets worse? You know, did you see the Republican debate?
I've seen most of them. I saw the last one, yes.
The one on CNBC?
The one that the last one was on CBS.
Oh.
And that's the one where they gave I think it was on CBS. I know it had CBS people on it. I know they were sponsoring it. That's the one where they gave in 90 minutes of debate, they gave 89 seconds total to Ron Paul, who happens
to
be in a dead heat with in the Iowa primaries or whatever they call them. They're actually it's not formally a primary, but it's a caucus, the Iowa caucus. And he's like in a dead heat, but you know, they say, well, he's not a leader, he's not going to win, so they gave him 89 seconds, which is just, you know, this is the mainstream media is just, we might as well just give up.
Well, they're it's amazing that they're in a debate where you're supposed to have equal time, I assume they're pushing who they want and who they believe is the right person according to what they think is the leader. That's stupid.
Yeah.
Which makes him never able to be a leader in the race, right?
It's ridiculous.
But the one I'm talking about is when Perry made that fool of himself.
Yeah,
that happened two or three times.
No, that's a different one. I think that was the CNBC one, but in this debate, Perry actually came out quite reasonable. And Herman Cain said a bunch of dumb stuff, so I don't know.
Well, when I turned it on, the one from CNBC, and they were introducing the candidates, I swear, just for a moment there, I thought it was a Saturday Night Live sketch.
Oh, yeah. No, when exactly. When Perry went off to kind of the dumb end, it was hilarious.
When
Perry had a sense of humor about it because he went on the Letterman show to do the top 10.
Right.
About 10 reasons I screwed up, and it was very good.
Right. But they looked like caricatures of themselves. I mean, the way they were all hunched over, and this one, it was just – I thought it was very funny. But, you know, politics is just getting ugly. I mean, with now you have back to the anonymous women that are now coming forward for Cain and saying that he did something, whatever he did. And, I mean, it's just getting uglier and uglier, and it's pretty sad because I can't even imagine who would be at this point you know, presidential material from all the things we're seeing. But
well, apparently the Republicans do not want Romney, and so they keep dragging these characters up there hoping they kind of get some traction. Then once they're at the top, they get knocked down because there's something screwy about them. And now the latest one is they got Newt Gingrich as the top guy. And there's no way he's going to get nominated because he's not even going to want to be nominated. He's got too many sketchy bookkeeping problems with his own foundation.
Right. And then the other political issue was that off-mic comments from Sarkozy and Obama.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty ugly.
Yeah.
Tell everybody what it is if they haven't heard it. They don't know about it.
I'm wondering if, Sarkozy was moaning about the Netanyahu being a jerk. And
a liar.
He's a liar. And then Obama chimed in with, "Yeah, there's nothing but trouble working with that guy."
What are you complaining about? I got to work with him every day.
I got to work with the guy, and that was all mic'd up. And every time I see that, I'm thinking, these guys are. I can't believe somebody at that level doesn't realize they're mic'd up, because when you're mic'd up, the guys in the control room are going to be listening no matter what you think, unless you have a physical button. And in fact, when you get mic'd up, this is a little advice for anybody out there that does public speaking. They'll mic you up and they'll stick that little, like a remote, the wireless device, and some guys will end up going into the bathroom and, peeing in there or saying stuff in there. And the guys record it and get a big kick out of it. So you have to look at that little device, and then it's got an on and off switch. And once you get it going, you turn it off. And then the guy who mics you will say, you should keep that on. I'm keeping it off until I get on stage, you say. And then you stick it back in your pocket and you don't have to worry about it.
Right. Well, it was
a little coaching there for the wannabe.
That was nice. Good to know. Good to know.
It's good to know.
Amazon acquired Yap, which is kind of like Siri, this whole Siri thing. Siri's getting a kind of a good rap, bad rap. What do you think about the whole Siri thing?
I think it's a joke, personally. Mm.
Yeah. I've written about it,
and everyone thinks I'm just an Apple basher, and so whatever I say doesn't mean anything. But it's like, give me a break. Remind me to get milk. Okay. I mean,
and then you are an equal opportunity basher. I will attest to that. You don't take any if it's an OS this one or an OS that one. You'll bash it if it needs to be bashed.
Yes, right? I am. I'm very fair.
Right. I think so. I mean, there's sometimes that you go a little bit. There was a time that you didn't like Microsoft. I don't think that. Well, then again, maybe I don't think that time has ended yet.
Microsoft. I like.
No, there was a time that everybody thought that you hated Apple. You just hated Apple.
You've
come around
Apple.
A little bit. You've come around on Apple.
I've never come around. Nothing has changed. I like some of their products. Just some of these things, and the Apple Mavens. I don't care for them much. But the Apple products are good. They own the iPad. The pad market is owned by Apple. I have no problem saying that. If I was going to have a pad, I don't have one. I wouldn't want anything but an iPad. What would I want one of these second-rate pads for? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Somebody should get you one for Christmas.
Yeah, somebody should.
Mm-hmm. But
I'm waiting. But dude, get me the 3. I'll tell you what. Get me the 3.
Three.
The iPad 3. That's going to be the good one. We all know it.
I have the 2. I love it. I waited for the 2. I also got the other phone. I got the 4S. I was waiting.
How's
for the
5, battery doing for you?
I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem. I leave it plugged in all the time. No, I don't know. I don't have a problem with it. You got to do things like, I don't leave the Bluetooth on all the time. The GPS, you got to be careful about. I don't usually leave that on all the time either.
The thing has got a phenomenal camera.
Yeah, really good.
Not really good. Phenomenal. Take some pictures of some text. I mean, astonishing. I mean, this is basically a spy cam. Well, you could go, someplace and you're reading through a magazine and you don't want to buy the magazine. You just take a picture of the page and boom, it's just as good. I mean, it's amazing. It's very good at taking care of pictures of characters, words.
Mm-hmm. And characters.
Yeah, well, that too.
It seems that there was a little... I guess another snafu over at Facebook. They're saying there was a coordinated spam attack, which is being blamed for posting pornographic and violent images on the news feeds of various Facebook users.
Hmm.
And I asked my son about this tonight. I said, "Oh," he goes, "Oh, Dad, that's weeks already." I'm like, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah, we've all been getting all sorts of nude pictures and stuff
it
that just show up out
great.
Of nowhere." I said, really?
This is why we love Facebook, he told you.
So I guess they're trying to button that up a little bit. And, you know, but you know, you're going to have a computer. It's open up to the world. And that's what happens, I guess, right? I mean, there's no way to really protect it entirely unless you're unplugged from the internet.
You don't have to be a Facebook customer. That's one thing.
Okay.
Do you have a Facebook account?
Yes.
Really? I do not.
I thought you did. No?
No. The one that's on there is bogus. It's not me.
Oh. I have one, and I'll be honest. I don't use it for the finding of high school friends that I haven't seen in 25 years, that, you know, that whole thing, or seeking out what other people are doing on a regular basis and, you know, whether they're eating dinner now or not, or where they're going or who they're going out with. I use it more for just, you know, my blog posts over there, and people ask me questions, they can find me there and things like that. And it's just nothing. I don't really put pictures up there. I don't get the whole thing.
Well, I mean, they're on the thing. It's part of their life. That's the key. They're usually younger or really old, one of the two. And this is part of their life, and they check in all the time, and they're reading what everyone's doing, and then they...
I see it as a communication device. I get that. I understand how it's a good communication tool for bringing together people and you know, sharing information. I get that. It's great. It's wonderful. But, you know, beyond that, if... You know, you can't pick up a phone or whatever. I don't know. Seems like you should be able to do that. But anyway, I had a couple of things I want to talk to you. The Zynga IPO has been rumored to get kind of pushed back. There's some weird stuff going on over there with Zynga. This is the game company that does the mobile gaming, like Words with Friends, I believe.
Right.
And Mafia
local Wars company that decided that their employees that they made all these promises to. And, of course, I love the propaganda about this when it came out. It was, they're trying to get their stock options back, you know, because they gave too many away. Come on, work for us. We'll give you all these stock options. And then, you know, get near the IPO. And, you know, those stock options we gave you, we'd like to get half of them back. Do you mind?
Yeah, what is the story with that?
And then the propaganda is, oh, these companies do that all the time. It's a common practice in Silicon Valley. I've never heard this before.
I've never heard it before, and I don't know how they could do that.
You can't. I think they can't do it. It's all down. It's a contract, and I think they're trying to do it. And I guess that what's going to happen is the CEO or the top investors aren't going to get $5 billion. They're going to only get 2 or 1, and they don't like this. It's like, oh, well, how did we give all this stuff away to our employees? This is not going to work out well. And that's bogus, by the way. This nonsense. I should write a column about this. I have never heard this, ever. Generally speaking, they give more and more stock options away, not trying to drag them back.
We've heard things like Microsoft when they either repriced options or some options went underwater and they would actually...
Yeah, they repriced the other way, though.
Right, exactly.
They don't try to screw the employee.
I don't understand how they're going to do this, and I don't even know if it's possibly... Maybe it's not true. I mean, something's not right.
No, it's true.
This.
I think this has been. It's not a rumor. I think that this has been confirmed that they've been trying to do this. It was all over the local news. It's a local company, so they've talked about this quite a bit. And they keep making the argument that, well, this is very common in Silicon Valley near the beginning. You know, during an IPO period, that they try to get the stock options back. And like I said, I've only been here my whole life, and I've never heard this.
Right.
It's normal, really? Funny, no one else.
Is it possible that it's like the producers?
They really don't. That's a funny idea. They got nothing. They could sell this IPO, and they haven't got enough to cover all the options. Yeah. That would be funny. You know, that's a very interesting possibility.
Yeah, they just gave everybody options to come on board. They didn't realize what this was going to be. They said, here, take options. We'll pay a little amount. It grew.
They
the IPO's coming
it.
Out. Now they have, you know, a total share.
They're in the hole. They do a $15, $20 billion valuation, bring $20 billion in, they owe $40 in options. I mean, come on. Yeah.
That is pretty wild. Yeah, it's possible. I mean, anything's possible, right?
Listen, we saw
what happened with MF Global last week.
Yeah, there you go.
What a disaster.
Corzine,
you know, his history, of course, you know, senator, governor, Goldman, CEO, and, you know, just screwed up royally. I mean, what a did we talk about this at all?
It's terrible. No, that would have been talked about last week, the show you missed.
Mm. Oh, yeah. The MF Global filed for bankruptcy. This, you know, they took about $200 million, leveraged it up to like $6 billion, and bought, of all things, the sovereign debt of Portugal, Spain, Italy. And that didn't turn out
too
well.
What were they thinking?
I have no idea. I mean, I guess they were thinking that the government would bail them out. But the problem is with that much leverage, 30-to-1 leverage, which by now you would think that someone would wake up and realize that kind of leverage could be dangerous. But no. So what happens is that the bonds come down, and as they come down, you got a little bit of cushion there. But when they come down a little bit more, 2-3%, that reverberates. You know, now all of a sudden you got a 30-to-1, and your value of your investment goes down very quickly. But the bigger problem with the MF Global situation, which is a broker in the futures area, was that it seems that they commingled client funds, which is a big no-no.
Oh.
So you can't be using and borrowing and, you know, taking a little bit from this account and that account to back the other deals, and there's a few hundred million dollars still questionable and possibly missing.
Oh, this could be jail time.
Yeah, this is really bad. Hmm. And there's a real big problem with that because you have multiple issues that go with this. So you have all these accounts that were frozen. I think they were just unfrozen, but all these accounts that are frozen, and they have all these futures and options and things in there, and the clients can't do a thing with it. They're at the mercy of the markets. So what happens? The CME and ICE come out and they change the margin requirements across the board for all commodities. Instead of saying, okay, oftentimes what happens is when there's too much froth in a market like silver, gold, they'll change the margin requirements so that people have to make sure to come up with money so that CME or ICE or whoever it is not caught short with, you know, having client go under because of the marginability of futures. So what happens is they say, well, we're going to cut down the margin so that in the event there is any kind of disruption in the market, it's not going to cause a major bust of a trade automatically for people that, you know, that can't do anything with their accounts.
Yeah.
Bad. This is like last week, and it was pretty surprising. So, you know, that probably helped a little bit of the volatility here because you could actually do more futures in your account than you could have before that for any individual that's trading. So instead of maybe buying 4 contracts, which was your total exposure that you were able to do, now you can do 5 or 6. Hmm. So that just adds extra volatility and possible swings in the markets. So that's kind of what's been, you know, the crazy news items. And this is the fall off already from the sovereign crisis. This is just number one. The other thing you have is a big question right now on the amount of CDS exposure, the possible insurance, if you will, for sovereign debt between Goldman, JP, Citi, Bank of America. There is trillions of dollars of CDS exposure. Some of it is backed and some of it's not. That could be a big problem if one of these countries defaults. This is why they're trying so hard not to default, not to cause any kind of default that would trigger a CDS, because the numbers are astounding that have to be paid. And that's why Goldman and JP, all these stocks are under major, major pressure. We're actually short the financials right now.
Interesting. That would make sense, because the CDS, which of course we're talking about, credit default swaps, which is a tradable insurance policy for all practical purposes, leveraged, pay off big when they're bet against some of these sovereign debt in particular.
Right. In theory, I guess it is that they never pay off, but you just buy them just for protection. It's almost like
They were always just a protection mechanism. They were never – now they're like an investment mechanism.
Right. And if they pay off, it's kind of like if you have an insurance company that's insuring the lives of all the people in a country, let's say, and everybody dies at once. Well, yeah. The actuarial tables are not set for that.
No, but you get a big check in the mail.
Yeah, you do, but maybe if they could pay it.
Yeah, well, if they can pay it, you get a big check in the mail.
Right, but what I'm saying is that what happens is that now all of a sudden you have an entire region going down, and maybe you overinsured. There's really no regulations on the CDS.
Right. So you can't. Well, they've been trying to do something, but they can't do anything.
Well, Gensler's an idiot.
Yeah.
Gary, he's a year late. He's you know, he had to recuse himself from the MF Global deal because he's friends with Corzine. And so you're like, wait, well, hold on. Let's back up. So if you're recusing yourself, it's because you have oversight. Okay. Uh-huh. And you're friends with the guy. Uh-huh. And you didn't have any idea as an agency what was going on? What kind of oversight?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really a pathetic situation.
No, the situation, the overall situation is just ready to make a huge mess.
Right. And you wonder why all these people are sleeping in parks. With the Occupy Wall Street, you know?
Yeah.
They're just aggravated with all this. I'm not sure what good they're doing. They just got thrown out of the New York park tonight. The judge.
Yeah, they got beaten up, too. You got to remember, you got to club them.
Oh, is that what it is? You got to take billy clubs to them.
So we got a great thing coming up on the next No Agenda show on Thursday because my son has done a lot of research, but I won't even tease it, but this whole Occupy thing is something of a scam in some ways and legitimate in others, and it's very interesting the way it's going to turn out.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, the bottom line is you got to wonder if this is really a grassroots situation. We'll find out more on No Agenda. I know you guys are going to talk about it. I'm interested because I'm going to have one of the representatives from OccupyWallStreet.org on my show. I can't wait to hear what they have to say.
I'll have some questions for you to ask him.
Yeah.
And he probably – depends, you know, depends. Anyway, I don't want to over –
Well, let me just say one thing.
They were nervous. Expose the cool information we've uncovered.
They were nervous about us attacking them and really, you know, ripping them.
Oh, you're not going to do that. Why would you?
Well, but here's what's interesting. I'm thinking, wait a minute, let me get this straight. You're totally ripping Wall Street and sleeping out and picketing, and you're worried about me asking some questions?
You?
I think that's no. I'm saying it's reasonable.
And you're a softballer.
Yeah. Let's try to get to the facts. Just the facts. You know, and I put up a post recently. It said,
But make sure to mention to him that you hate unions.
Oh, really? They're not going to like that, huh?
It's actually your third pet peeve.
Unions, I don't like.
We've got you hate unions. You don't like bare feet.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the other one? Buybacks, stock buybacks. That's the three bigoted opinions of yours that.
Well, you don't like the people from, what do you say, Iceland, so.
I'm sorry?
Didn't you say something about you dissed Iceland one time?
I love Iceland.
Oh, yeah. We'll go back to the tapes on that. I have one question before we get to our stocks. This is important. You have to answer this for me. Seriously. Adobe is discontinuing their Adobe Flash Mobile.
Yeah.
And for their TV, it seems, which is less of an interest.
Right.
What's going to be taken over? HTML5 is one option. Is there anything else?
Which doesn't really work.
What else is there?
I'm not sure.
I mean, I don't get it. I mean,
Well, it's only on mobile. I mean, I think they're going to – I don't know. It will – I have no idea how this
is
going to
shake out.
But it
did work on Android, of course, and Android actually is the number one smartphone OS. It just didn't work on Apple.
They just said they're not going to continue to develop. It doesn't mean they're going to pull the plug on it.
Well, they can't pull the plug on it. If somebody has the software to develop, they can have it.
Yeah.
But that means the same thing in a way. They're really taking it down.
I think it's a problem. They don't have – over the years, Flash has demanded so much horsepower that I don't think it really runs very well on an ARM chip.
Well, either the ARM chips are going to have to come up to the next level, and the mobile chips will have to come up to the next level, because the fact is that mobile devices are, you know, able to stream. Maybe it's just going to be streaming. Maybe it'll be just streaming.
Well, streaming still needs a vehicle to stream.
Right.
The images. I think there may be some. They may have something up their sleeve. I don't know. I'm going to hold back on that.
Okay.
I have no real opinion.
I hear you. All right. Let's go to the stocks. You want to go to the stocks?
I
won't
be buying Adobe though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What do we got? Well, let's see. Oh, I'm getting down to my target number, which is $60.
Yeah, but you're going to have to re-up it because you were stopped out.
I was.
Yep. Last was 82, mm-hmm. And you were stopped out. It dipped all the way down and came back up. I'm not sure where it is right now. But
where did it dip down to?
Dipped to like 70-something.
I'm good.
Okay. I mean, you're not going to reshort.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. You have a moment to think. No rush.
You know, I think I'm not going to. I'll wait till the market shit settles out. I'm kind of – I think I hit the home run with that one. I mean, I think this is as good as your croc short at 80 as anything.
All right. Well,
Apple hasn't done anything, so that's interesting.
couple of things I'll tell you about. Verifone. Verifone did really great. As a matter of fact, yesterday it was up 8%. It's been kind of vacillating. It has some decent things happen. And then they're buying a major payment system that covers the whole Northern Europe, which everybody was very excited about because now they're going to have just a big presence in Europe, whatever's left of Europe. And that was pretty exciting. Gulfport Energy came out with good earnings. And on top of that, there was a great find. Anadarko found Anadarko, their earnings came out, and one of the big issues was an area inside of Colorado, just north of Denver, a shale area that was really producing, and they found dramatic amounts of oil and gas and things. So Gulfport has some exposure there as well, and that helped the stock kind of move up. Also, and that's about to break out if it can. It's got a light volume. That's the only concern we have on that. The direction triple long financials did very well. We just got stopped out recently. I'm going the other way. We're going to go triple short financials now.
Well, that's a switch.
Yep. Well, you got to kind of work both sides of it. So. And then other than that, I mean, you know, some of the Chinese stocks are really hurting lately. We actually were short EDU, which is China Education. We made about 6% and moved out of it because of where it stopped right now. Also, Baidu's been coming down. So has Sina. And there's a big concern about some of the Chinese companies out there. So just
also
point that
out of Cliff's bar. Cliff's natural bar.
Oh, Cliff's too bad. It was up so nicely today. Yeah, so happens with the stopouts.
Baidu, yeah. Well, the list now looks pretty boring. Except I kind of like Travelzoo. I think you got something there.
Yeah, Travelzoo was up actually really nicely today. It's got to get past this 30. It just can't get past 30 on the close. Just can't do it. It was there a little while today and then came back. If it gets past 30, it's going to zoom. But it's got to get past that 30 level.
I got nothing. I was thinking of the one earlier I mentioned, which was Groupon's shorting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Groupon, and then they're going to have they are destined to hit 20 again.
Yeah, we'll I think so. I'm going to wait.
I hear you. All right, so we're going to go with a short on the financials, and because of the CDS exposure, because of the lack of earnings, because of all the problems in the market, they'll be, I think, the weak link in all this. Mentioning, though, that anything that we talk about here in this section, or really any part of the show, is not a recommendation to buy or sell any security. This is just for fun. You have to seek competent, professional financial advice or do your own research before you come up with any of this. Bottom line is that you have to realize that any investment carries risk, which I'll tell you, by the way, I had a call from a fella today. And I'll give you a snippet of this, okay? He follows Jim Cramer's blogs and things like that. Now, this is unsubstantiated. This is what he was just told me. And he really likes the stuff they do. He just follows them and all that. Smart guy. He gave a pretty significant amount of money to one of the, I guess, recommended newsletters / money managers that is within, I guess, on Cramer's list or something, and or part of the network or something of that nature. And they did a lot of options work. Well, I guess the account went down about 70% in August.
In 1 month?
Yeah. Well, it was actually a couple of weeks. Because what happened was that big drop, they were long all these options and they were, you know, going to expire and they were way underwater. So the options lose money very quickly when that happens. And if he didn't pull the plug, he said he would have been left with probably zero. And he told me a couple of stories about this same kind of situation, but I thought that was really interesting. I got to find out more about, you know, what's on Cramer's list or what the story is about advisors. I don't know what he's doing there, but or what's happening.
Well, all I know is if you listen to Cramer, you want to still be in Bear Stearns.
Good point. But I got to find out more about this. I was really surprised about that. That's a significant loss, by the way, on a significant amount of money.
Huh.
We're talking about six figures of losses.
Yeah. That would be annoying.
Yeah, I was pretty shocked. I was pretty shocked that he actually wanted to continue
tell anybody that too.
Well, tell anybody or invest more. He wanted to invest. Like, really?
If I were you, I would whatever you. He tells you to do the opposite.
Right. Yeah, that was pretty pretty rough period.
All right.
So that's about all. And
well, good. I'm glad to talk to you. We haven't talked since you were out. Wherever you were doing. Tuesday. I guess it was miserable. I think the market's going to be a mess until the end of the year, and it will January. I think we'll get a reset.
It's possible. I mean, right now, I mean, already we're seeing the euro fall off overnight.
I think they're going to get nothing is going to bad is going to happen until after Christmas, in my opinion, because mm-hmm. they cannot let Christmas be killed by this situation. They will stall and stall, whatever they have to do, so they can maybe get a Christmas season in, maybe some retail sales, I mean, anything to get past Christmas. And then I think January will be interesting in Europe. I don't think it's going to be pretty.
Yeah. I mean, you got the Asian markets taking a beating. I mean, for example, the Kospi, which is the South Korea was up 1.5%. It's down 0.75%. Hong Kong's down 2%. China's down 2%. Nikkei's down 1%. I mean, this is pretty ugly. New Zealand's down 1%. They don't usually go down like that. And the futures are down about 1% already. And this is only, just going into Wednesday the evening, or the Tuesday evening into Wednesday. So it's let's see what the euro's doing here. Euro is 134.5.
Yeah.
So down about 0.5%.
That's nothing.
Nothing. Got a long way to go. I'll see you next week, my friend.
30 points. Okay, we'll talk again on Tuesday.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.